Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you in part by Rotman Executive Programs. AI is a hot-button topic these days. It's never been more important to make sense of what AI is, and more importantly, how to use it. Under the Rotman School of Management, Rotman's Generative AI and Organizational Transformation Program will help you dive into the risks and rewards of this ever-evolving technology. Visit www.uoft.me/RotmanAI to learn more. Again, that's www.uoft.me/RotmanAI. This episode is brought to you in part by AG1. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. That's why they've had 52 iterations of their formula and counting. It takes 60 seconds to scoop, shake, and drink all your daily nutritional needs. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/commons. That is drinkag1.com/commons. Check it out. On a cold February evening in Petty Harbor, Newfoundland, Kimberly Oren showed us around the handful of buildings and boats that she uses to fight what some people consider a losing battle.
Yeah, so we have wooden dories down here that we practice corking a dory on. And down at the end of Cyril's stage during the summer, we have a floating pier. And then we have some citizen science projects that go on down there at the end also to incorporate that into the sustainable fishing that we undergo here.
Kimberly spent much of her life as a science teacher. But today, she tries to inspire wonder about the natural world with a nonprofit that she runs with her husband called Fishing for Success. And that losing battle that she's fighting is an attempt to keep Newfoundland's fishing traditions alive. They take all kinds of people onto the water who might not otherwise have the chance, especially children. Unfortunately, it was the wrong time of year, so we were hopelessly landbound.
The boat would be tied up here at the stage head, and that's where we'd get into a boat when it's fishing season. What we want to do, which is to get as many people in the boat as possible and provide access to fishing for folks who normally wouldn't have access to it.
We walked past a small boat that was painted with a pride rainbow on the outside and the pink and blue of the trans pride flag on the inside. A physical example of the kind of inclusive ethic they approach their work with.
Yeah, so, you know, young folks and women and newcomers and Indigenous folks, and try to give them access to fishing out in the ocean. It's not something that folks have access to as much as we used to.
Despite being a society built on the fishery, most people in Newfoundland and Labrador no longer have a direct connection to it. Even just a few decades ago, right before the cod moratorium, around 30% of working people in the province were somehow involved in the fishing industry.
So just about everybody had a nan or a pop, and so they had more access to going out and going fishing. But today, with the industrialized and professionalized fishery, and it's less than 2% of us involved in the commercial fishery, access to it is much less. So how do you provide opportunity and access to something really, you know, fishing is something that humans have done ever since they could, you know, totter down to the shore. So Yes, that's what we're trying to do.
After walking around outside a little bit more, we went into the building that they call the schoolhouse to sit down to talk some more.
A washroom. Gotcha. And then this we call our schoolhouse.
Okay.
We try to keep the fish out of it.
It didn't look much like a schoolhouse, to be honest. It was more of a small wooden shack with a little wood stove that kept the winter chill out. And written into every nook and cranny of the wooden walls were the names of the many, many people who passed through here. Fishing for Success is the brainchild of both Kimberly and her husband, Leo. Kimberly grew up partially in Newfoundland, but moved around a lot because her father was in the U.S. Navy. She taught science for years. Meanwhile, Leo, he's born and raised in Petty Harbor. He worked as a fisherman for much of his life. And when you sit down to talk to them, it's clear that in some ways, they're very different people. Kimberly fully enunciates every word properly, evoking her past as a school teacher. Leo, he talks in a typical Newfoundland brogue. Kim is clearly the optimist in the relationship, and Leo plays the role of the cynical fisherman who's seen it all and knows better than to expect much more. But together, they're more than the sum of their parts.
Then when I met Kimberly, we decided to kind of think like I was the one who said that first.
I don't think so. You're not taking the idea.
I told Kimberly, I said that.
Forget the part that I went to grad school for 7 years.
Yeah, that got nothing to do with it.
Forget that.
For Kimberly, part of the inspiration for co-founding Fishing for Success was seeing how disconnected her students had become from the natural world.
I would take my students on field trips, and I noticed over time that kids were just less and less connected with knowing the plants and animals in their own backyards, and then seeing their attraction to their smartphones.
And not knowing where their fish came from.
Not knowing where things were grown. So I was just concerned that maybe I was teaching the wrong thing, being in the classroom.
Leo, meanwhile, before he met Kimberly, had been taking tourists out on the water so they could experience some fishing for themselves.
So I was taking people out for $40 a person, get the fish and bring it in, and I'd buy whatever I needed. My opinion then was like, we need to teach our tourists about our culture. So like I was on the right lines, but nobody in the family, my family, said, oh, like, it's all right, you can't do nothing with it. Then Kimberly come along, and she said, that's what I want to do. And I said, like, you can't do that, unless I'm doing it. Then she said, well, and we end up doing it together.
That's what brings them together. Despite their very different backgrounds and personalities, they both possess a conviction that it's essential to pass down the hundreds of years of knowledge and tradition of Newfoundland's fishermen. Because the truth is that in Newfoundland and Labrador, fishing is more than just an industry or a job. It truly is a way of life. It's the core of what has made this place what it is.
Things are different, aren't they?
Yeah, the world has changed, and so...
So many things calling them away.
Do you change with the world, or do you try to change the world to become with us?
Or do you just change the little place around you?
Well, the only thing we can do is what we're doing.
Kim and Leo, they're trying their best to do exactly that. Change the little place around them. But is it even worth it to try to keep all of that alive? After all, there's plenty of ways to make a living. And what kind of future is in store for the people who refuse to let go? I'm Arshi Mann, and this is Commons. More after the break.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode is brought to you in part by Rotman Executive Programs. Now, some people say it is hard to make sense of how to feel about AI, and that seems right to me. But one thing is for certain. AI is, whether you like it or not, going to be part of our lives in some way, shape, or form. Rotman's Generative AI and Organizational Transformation Program will help you elevate your skills to advance your career and future-proof your organization. It'll equip you with the tools to create a strategic roadmap for success. You'll discover practical applications for AI and drive value for your organization while learning from industry experts over 3 days at Rotman. From upskilling employees to ethical concerns, Rotman's Generative AI and Organizational Transformation Program will help you gain the confidence to tackle this incredible technology. Visit www.uoft.me/RotmanAI to learn more. Again, that is www.uoft.me/RotmanAI to learn more. This episode is brought to you in part by AG1. Look, I'm no health guru, but the one thing that you can count on me for is finding how to make difficult things easy. So say goodbye to the tens of nutritional pill bottles in your cupboard, because AG1 replaces multiple health supplements like multivitamins, digestive aids, immune support, and more in just one simple scoop. And taking care of your health, it just doesn't have to be so time-consuming and difficult. There have been 52 iterations of the formula and counting, because AG1's team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and bring you the best quality ingredients available. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/commons. That is drinkag1.com/commons. Check it out. There's no question that the modern history of Canada begins with the cod fishery. In 1497, John Cabot arrived in Newfoundland only 4 years after Columbus landed on the island of Hispaniola, and his voyage initiated a long series of events that resulted in the settlement, conquest, and subjugation of the northern part of this continent and its indigenous inhabitants by European powers. And even though Newfoundland and Labrador was the last province to join Confederation, it was that encounter of Cabot and his crew stumbling across more fish than they could imagine that directly led to the creation of the state that we now call Canada. But as I've been researching these last few episodes, I've started to have even more ambitious thoughts about the importance of the cod fishery. I think you could credibly argue that the Grand Banks off of Newfoundland are one of the very birthplaces of modernity itself. Alongside gold and silver from West Africa and Mesoamerica, Atlantic cod was one of the very first globally traded commodities, spurring the creation of a new trading ecosystem and building vast fortunes on both sides of the Atlantic. Newfoundland was Britain's first overseas colony, inaugurating the British Empire, an institution under whose shadow we still all live under. Slavers used salt cod as currency and traded the commodity for West African captives. And it was one of the main foods given to those very same slaves while they worked on the brutal sugar plantations of the Caribbean, which provided the excess calories needed to power the Industrial Revolution. The wheels of colonialism, globalization, and industrialization all started rolling in part because Europeans saw the potential for profit that codfish represented. And the reason I bring all of this up is to say that for me, the past, present, and future of the fishery in Newfoundland and Labrador isn't a small question. It's a potential conclusion to a story of epoch-defining proportions. If the modern world has its roots in the waters off of the coast of Newfoundland, maybe we can learn something about our collective future there, too. Scores of workers have toiled on these seas, catching fish, making a life, and inadvertently shaping the world. For hundreds of years, they passed down their knowledge, their expertise, and their traditions from one generation to another. And at the end of one of those long threads of history was Leo Hearn, a young boy growing up in Petty Harbor who wanted to be just like his dad.
When I was in school, teacher says, "So like Leo, so what are you going to want to be?" And I'm like, "I want to be a fisherman." "No, but like, what do you want to be?" And I'm like, "I want to be a fisherman like my father." And they're like, Yeah, but like when you finish your education, what do you want to be? Fisherman. Like, are you getting it? That's right, you know?
By the time he was working age, he convinced his dad to take him out with him.
So I came home and said, Dad, I want to go fishing. Yes, bye. He said, you want to go fishing? No problem. But he said, there's no inn.
Leo didn't know what his dad meant when he said there was, quote, no inn.
But the next morning I knew what he meant when we were out and it was like really rough and we're jigging squids at 5 o'clock in the morning and I got squirt between the two eyes and I got seasick. So I'm like, oh, there's the harbor. He'll bring me home.
Even though the harbor was in sight, his dad didn't take him home. And that's when he realized what his dad meant by no inn. They were going to work the day, no matter what.
And he didn't. He brought me right to the fishing ground.
No inn.
And I'm like, no inn. Now I know what he means, right? If he had to bring me in, some other boat might have got where he was planning on going to.
On his first proper trip out in the water, young Leo had just discovered that he was a wannabe fisherman who is susceptible to seasickness, which is not ideal. But he kept at it.
For years, I was like so embarrassed that I couldn't do my work because I was seasick, right? Get seasick, but I tried, get sick again. And yeah, I stayed at it for, I fished for 25 years and we had our own enterprise, myself, my brother, and I still got sick every day, but I stayed at it because I loved it. Like, I just loved the fact that every day you were learning something different out there. And that's what fishing is about. And on the ocean, it's everything changes. The weather changes quick. The water gets rougher. Water gets smooth. After then, I got my own boat, and now I don't get sick. Like, you're in control. Makes the difference, right? Yeah, it feels like you're in control. Like.
Unlike Leo, Kimberly didn't aspire to be a fisherman, but she did grow up around the water.
Growing up around the wharf, you could just join in with all the other kids in the community and help pull out guts of fish. And for me, that was pretty exciting because I wanted to know what the parts were. And I wanted to know if it was a girl fish or a boy fish. And I learned more about science pulling out guts of fish than I did in the science classroom. And that's where I think really it glued me to this place. And then also did secure my interest in science. So I wanted to go fishing, go ice fishing, go fishing for mud trout. Never could get a fisherman to take me out cod fishing because girls were bad luck in a boat, but I kept trying. And as soon as I could get my own boat, I did.
Kim and Leo are both incredibly knowledgeable about fishing and the waters off of the Newfoundland coast, but they each bring a different kind of knowledge to the table.
So I'm the one with the book learning, you know. So I've spent the 7 years in grad schools in fisheries and aquatic sciences so I could start this project. Went to Marine Institute so that I could get the fishing captain's ticket and all of that. And he's got the traditional knowledge. And so we constantly have this tug of war between us about whose knowledge is
She's got more
knowledge.
She's got more stuff on paper than a lot of commercial fishermen in the harbor, because she went and done land, passed and all, good marks and everything. So that's why I said, you should go and do this course. And she said, no, no, no.
Yeah, well, he wants to take credit for it. But anyway, that's okay.
Not taking credit for it. It was the right move to make. If I had to go there, I wouldn't make it as good as you would have.
Together, they combine both of their experiences to teach people about fishing and give them firsthand experience that they might not get otherwise. Kids make up a big portion of their clients.
Things have gotten worse since the pandemic because so many kids had to do online school. And so that really then solidified that interface with technology, you know. And so when you get kids out in the boat and they've got five senses engaged instead of just their thumbs on this slick screen, but now they are, you know, smelling things that they've, you know, a lot of the kids will cover their face and make disgusting sounds. And then it's cold out there and, you know, they're getting splashed with water and the motion of the boat when they're so used to having sturdy ground under their feet, every sense is engaged. It's very overloading for some of them.
But they don't only serve children. One of the first groups Kim and Leo worked with was First Light, a local Indigenous friendship center that connected them with a group of Inuit elders living in St. John's. When the executive director of First Light broke the news to the elders, many of them got emotional.
She said when she went and told the Inuit elders that they were going fishing, that some of them cried because they're away from their homeland, and many of them hadn't been fishing since they left home. So to be able to provide that kind of access for them is, it makes us cry to have them here. And
it's good. For me, it's like to see the people that leave here after the day, nobody's disappointed. You know,
yeah.
They had a good day on the water, they caught their fish. They're just amazed with it, you know? So we're doing a program that's right.
For Kim and Leo, connecting people with fishing isn't just about ensuring the past survives. It's about the future.
So don't forget that there's so many other things that we need people to understand about what's happening on the water. 70% of the planet is covered by water, especially ocean. Climate change is driven by the ocean and in turn drives changes that we see on the ocean. And so if we're going to get young people involved in this climate change conundrum that we've got going on, we really need to get children back to the ocean. So how do we do that? I mean, if it means getting kids back to the wharf, hauling out fish guts and cutting out cod tongues, well, then that's what I'm trying to figure out, right? And I worry that we aren't inspiring the next generation of scientists that we need to solve the biggest problems that are coming up, because I really think the biggest problems are nature-based. I don't think we're going to code ourselves out of this coming big problems that we have.
Once we get them out here and we get them doing the mm-hmm. stuff that we do, they get like, oh, wow. They're not worried about their phone. You know.
No, they're taking their phone out when they want to get a picture of their friend with the big fish.
Yeah.
While I was talking to Kimberly and Leo, there was one question that I couldn't stop thinking about. When is work more than just work? In Newfoundland and Labrador, it's clear that for so many people, fishing represents something more than just work, though it is that as well. But why should people care if the fishery disappears? That's a question Jen Thornhill-Verma, the author of Cod Collapse, who you've heard from in our last two episodes, has been contemplating for years.
Those who live next to the fishery have the most at stake when it's gone. And I think they care deeply about being able to preserve a way of life, which means, you know, if you care about the way of life, you have to care at least as much about the fish and the oceans. If you remove the local fishery, the inshore fishery, the local boats, then I think you remove that access point to understanding how the world around us is changing. The people wearing the boots and boats and harbors where this is happening, they care deeply because they live there. They raise their kids there. You know, their kids go to school here. They're mowing the lawns and taking care of the local parks. And the minute that we just, you know, lose sight of the fact of how important these inshore fisheries and small-scale fisheries are, I think we also just become even more complacent than we are today.
And as we learned during the cod collapse, inshore fishers are a vital source of knowledge about our oceans and coastlines.
I think Canada has a big role to play in this because we have the longest coastline on the planet. Just in Newfoundland and Labrador, there's 400 fishing-dependent communities. I'm sure there are many more communities involved in the fishery as well. And I'm sure there are thousands across Canada in and of itself. And, you know, if you don't have these communities fighting for those fishery resources at the edge of the ocean, then I think we really are in trouble.
In recent years, more and more people have become interested in where the food on their plate comes from. And it is no different when it comes to seafood.
I was at I'll call it a shishi restaurant on the wharf in Halifax in the fall. And I said, you know, where's this cod from? And the server said, well, it's from the Atlantic Ocean. Okay. I need a little more specificity than that. I'd really like to know how it was caught, in which part of the Atlantic Ocean. I think we should be asking more of what's on our plate. You know, it may seem counterintuitive. I've mentioned this a few times that Atlantic cod is nowhere near its one-time level of abundance. But every time I bring my kids to Newfoundland, I will take them out on the wharf, often facilitated by Kimberly Oren and Leo Hearn and Petty Harbor to take them fishing. And I do that because I want them to know where their fish comes from. You know, there's good evidence to suggest if you know where your fish is from, you're going to be more likely to care about that fish. And I will say, as somebody who reports on fisheries, and conservation issues, it's really hard to get people to care about fish. You know, polar bear, sure. Atlantic cod, not so much. And that's part of the conversation. You know, I think if we're going to turn things around, then everyday people need to start questioning what's on their plate.
And Jen says that even though for most of us, the work of fishermen is invisible, it is essential.
It operates in the background, but if it were gone, we would desperately miss it. We would desperately miss it.
Despite the best efforts of people like Kim, Leo, and Jen, the future of the fishery remains uncertain. For one, there's just no guarantee that we won't once again cause an environmental calamity like the destruction of the Atlantic cod.
You know, a big failing of why fisheries today in Canada are not sustainably managed is, you know, it has a lot to do with not being premised on the best available science advice. I did an examination. I looked at all fish species at risk in Canada. So it was over 200 species of fish at risk. And it was very clear to me, the data shows that the greater determinant of whether or not a fish species at risk gets protected is not its risk status, but its commercial value. So if you don't take a fish out of the water, then somebody's bottom line is impacted. This is why when we think about the future of the fishery and having a fishery that has much bigger boats, more at stake, you know, it's going to make these decisions on teetering between conservation and commercialization veer more in the direction of commercialization. And, you know, we just won't have that kind of life and livelihood that the inshore fishery once protected and promoted in Newfoundland and Labrador.
If we once again fish entire species out of existence, then the entire debate around the future of the fishery is moot. But there are models, more sustainable ones, that could serve as an example. One of the persistent problems with the Newfoundland groundfish fishery is that it's generally favored volume over quality.
Traditionally, the Northwest Atlantic cod fishery was really premised on, I'll call it a fish stick model, where they were catching enormous amounts of cod and then freezing it as blocks, and then that would be used for fish sticks or cod cakes. But I think when people make comparisons between, you know, Icelandic cod or Norwegian cod and Newfoundland and Labrador cod, they're also looking at where that cod is going and how it's being processed. And I would say that you're seeing a lot more fillets coming out of a country like Iceland than you would now from Newfoundland and Labrador.
There's a few examples in Newfoundland and Labrador of fishermen pushing in that direction. Petty Harbor, where we've been doing much of our reporting, is one of those places.
Like, this is about not sustainability only. It's about abundance. It's about protecting a way of life and fishing, culture and community well into the future. And so they made the decision to move to a handline-only cod fishery. And I think as a result, you know, many people who visit Newfoundland and Labrador, or Newfoundlanders and Labradorians as well, will visit Petty Harbor to see that, because that is a way of life that once was and is demonstrating that it can persist. So Petty Harbor fishermen, they're also getting a greater value for the fish that they catch. Not the case with the handline cod fishers, because they are fishing a premium fish and fillet, and that's what people are looking for.
There's other examples, many of which involve fishers banding together to cut out the middlemen.
A good example of that is the Fogo Island Co-op. So they collectively will fish, and they have a fish-to-table program where they're selling to restaurants in Ontario and Quebec. And so by eliminating that middleman, they're able to get a better price point for their catch.
Ryan Cleary is himself trying to get a cooperative off the ground, which he sees as the best path forward for Newfoundland's fishers. He points to the Labrador Fishermen's Union Shrimp Company, a social enterprise set up by Labradorian fish harvesters, as an inspiration.
They've got 5 processing plants, 500 employees. These 130 fishermen now have 2 middle distance boats, got their own offshore factory freezer trawler that they actually own 50% of with a cooperative, fishermen's cooperative out of New Brunswick. So the line of thinking is something similar for Newfoundland, where the inshore fleet, the inshore enterprise owners have to become a player. They have to become the processor, not just the harvester, the processor, the marketer. They have to become players at the table. The only way for the inshore fleet to save themselves is to save themselves. And a cooperative is the way to do that. You can't look to government to fix the problems when government is the problem.
Like Kim and Leo and Jen, Ryan Cleary also isn't willing to just let the fishery die a slow death, at least not without a fight.
We need a bit of a revolution when it comes to the fishery in Newfoundland and Labrador, but the question is whether or not there's enough life left. One of the biggest things that you fight against here in Newfoundland and Labrador is apathy. A lot of years have passed. A whole generation on the water has basically been lost. It's been lost in terms of groundfish, in terms of cod or whatever. Do we have the backbone? Do we have the determination, the vision, and the will to become masters of our own destiny, to take over management control like it should be taken up control? We'll see. I know I've got the fight in me. I'm going to fight until there's no fight left. I mean, I don't know how to stop.
But the possibility of fishers asserting themselves more, creating new structures that could be more sustainable, both ecologically and financially, that's only one potential future. And not by any means the most likely one. Because by all accounts, there's fewer people than ever that even want to be fishermen.
Atlantic Canada is home to Canada's highest proportion of seniors, and the fish and seafood workforce is no exception to that in Newfoundland and Labrador, but across Atlantic Canada. And fewer young people are definitely considering careers in fisheries for a whole number of reasons, and whether that's aboard boats or on processing lines, they're just not choosing the fishery. The economic risk of enterprise ownership is a major impediment. I mean, today in Canada, it's hard enough to own a home, let alone operate and own your own fishing enterprise. You also, you know, as an owner operator, you've got to front your seasonal costs before you know what the fishing season will bear, before you know what processors will pay at the wharf. Like, this is just an extraordinary amount of risk that most people, most everyday workers, just cannot understand. They also, fishers have to be highly adaptable. They have to master different gear types for different fisheries. They have to ramp up to new fisheries. And there is this interesting case in Newfoundland, Labrador, where you talk to fishermen, they love their jobs. They can't see themselves doing anything else. They love that their office is on the water, but they don't wish it upon their loved ones. That's going to put us in, it's already putting us in a serious crunch in terms of trying to keep afloat what is a really important industry in Atlantic Canada and Canada, but we're going to feel that crunch even more in the next decade for sure.
And the truth is that it's not easy to become a fisher. After the cod moratorium, the job became increasingly professionalized, requiring education, additional licensing, and significant startup costs. That predicament is something that Kimberly Oren and Leo Hearn have been thinking about a lot.
A young fisherman who was speaking at one of the events one time, he said it was easier to become an astronaut than become a fisherman. I know he was exaggerating,
but he was speaking
out of frustration because he said when you look at the amount of money that it takes to invest in purchasing an enterprise, investing 5 years of service and showing your connection to the fishery, going to Marine Institute and investing in those courses. And then you have to have your 70% of your income come from fishing during the fishing season. And you're literally, as fishing crew, you know, you're living at poverty as fishing crew. You'd be better off just not even trying. And so he said, it's just too hard.
Much of this was by design. In the years after the cod moratorium, the feds, the province, and the fishers' union were in agreement that the number of fish harvesters had to go down. Fishing could no longer be the employment of last resort in Newfoundland and Labrador. A licensing system was part of the solution. But no one is around to buy their licenses.
So they really fucked themselves. Excuse the language, but they did. Because now, the guys are getting up in age, going to want to sell their license, right? And there's no young crowd there to buy it.
Every time a fisherman retires and that fishing license leaves the community, it's a serious blow for small outports.
And when you come back here in 10 years' time, all these little small boats are going to be all up on the dock.
When a fisherman retires, you know, you ask, well, who bought his license? And they're like, we don't know. It's not no one in the
Nobody
community.
Knows.
Even in Petty Harbor, Kim and Leo have seen the changes over the last few years.
There were how many convenience stores?
Oh, God, it was six or seven.
Six or seven corner stores in the community. There's, you know, there's runoffs from that. There's, you know, there's connections to culture, heritage, tourism. There's all kinds of other, there's the local gas station. There's the, you know, the local restaurants. There's all of the little trickle downs that get lost now because that little boat isn't in that harbor anymore.
As we spoke to people in Newfoundland, there was one fear that kept being brought up again and again. The prospect of a fishery without any fishermen. For half a millennium, the people of Newfoundland and Labrador have toiled pulling fish out of the water off of the Grand Banks. But today, the monopolistic fish processors, they hold all the cards. They don't have any particular attachment to the history or tradition of the land, or any loyalty outside of the pursuit of profit. And as the number of fishermen in Newfoundland continues to decline, at some point, it might just make more sense to bring in foreign fleets to take the fish out of the water. The boats wouldn't even have to touch a Canadian shore. Our fishery could turn into a mining operation, something purely extractive in nature. And if that happened, then the Newfoundland fisherman could become a figure like the cowboy, something from history or mythology that we remember but isn't a real person anymore, who has knowledge and experience and a will to pass down what they know and value. It's that kind of future that Kim and Leo are trying desperately to fight off.
We don't know what the future of work looks like. I want to try to expose young people to as many different experiences as possible. There's such a deep transformative thing that happens when you go out fishing that I know it means something. And what that person does with it is completely, totally up to them.
And their battle may very well be a losing one, but they plan on fighting it regardless.
I hope that we have a better connection with the earth, with fellow humans, with beings that we share the ecosystem with. And I hope that we find a way to live more sustainably. Are we going to grow things and fish closer together and hunt and gather and just all of those, you know, things that we hear about? What does it look like? I don't know, but I want to give young people the space to be able to figure that out. It's their future. It's not mine. I mean, you can see, what am I, 60 now? I'm going to be 60 this year. It's not my future. It's theirs.
That's your episode of Commons. This is our final episode focusing on the work of fishermen in Newfoundland and Labrador, so we hope you enjoyed them. But we still have so many more episodes coming up in our series on work, so keep listening. If you like this episode, please leave us a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. I want to give a special thanks to Jen Thornhill Verma, who was an enormous help in connecting us with so many of the people we spoke to in this miniseries. This episode relied on work done by Jen Thornhill Verma, Ryan Cleary, Michael Harris, and so many others. And for the first time ever, we have some Commons merch on sale. So if you're interested in a t-shirt or a long sleeve shirt, check out the Canada Land store. Supporters get a 20% discount. If you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet us at CommonsPod. You can also email me, Arshi@CanadaLand.com. This episode was produced by me, Jordan Cornish, and Noor Azria. Our production coordinator is Andre Proulx. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Puglisi. And our music is by Nathan Burley. If you value this podcast, please support us. We rely on listeners like you paying for journalism, and as a supporter, you will get premium access to all of our shows ad-free, including early releases and bonus content. You'll also get our exclusive newsletter, discounts on CanadaLand merch, invites and tickets to our live and virtual events, and more than anything, you'll be a part of the solution to Canada's journalism crisis. And you'll be keeping our work free and accessible to everybody else. Come join us. Click the link in your show notes or go to CanadaLand.com/join. You can listen to Commons ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. This episode is brought to you in part by the Douglas Mattress. Now, I've said it before and I'll say it again. One of the best, and I mean the best things you can do for yourself, is to get a good quality mattress. The time is now, people. Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress protector, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That's douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. So we've been making Commons for 5 years now. It's over 100 episodes and counting. And our plan? Well, it's to keep making more seasons, even more episodes. And when I say we, I don't just mean the Commons team. I'm including you, our listeners and supporters. We can't make this show without you. We can't keep bringing you exceptional reporting every week without your support. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a CanadaLand supporter. So, from now until the end of May, we have a special deal for our listeners. Sign up now for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. You'll get access to all the episodes of Commons 1 week early and ad-free, as well as exclusive bonus content from all of our shows. There's discounts on merch, tickets to our live events, and so much more. This is a limited-time offer, and it's a pretty great deal that helps support our journalism. Just go to CanadaLand.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.